Thanks for tuning in to the Life in the Front Office podcast presented by Suja Organic, where we inspire, educate, and provide advice and insights around those who are in the sports business and entertainment industry. Please follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram at Life in the Front Office. And don't forget to follow and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Lastly, get your 15% off Suja at sujaorganic.com with the code LIFO, L-I-F-O. And enjoy today's episode. Welcome to today's episode on the Life in the Front Office podcast presented by Suja Organic. Excited for our guest today and John Schwartz, Managing Director and Head of Sports at ProSec Partners. We're going to dive into John's career path, not only at the Big Ten, the NFL, NASCAR, and a few other stops along the way. But we'll also get into some NFL stadium entitlement analysis that he's recently dove into, and we'll get into some interesting insights there. But John, welcome to the podcast.
Jake, it's great to be with you.
You know, you reached out, and as someone who's a listener of a long time, it's always great to have a listener on the podcast as a guest. So I have to just throw you a curveball from the start. What's the favorite episode you've listened to so far?
It's got to be Matt Nordby from NASCAR, one of my good friends and somebody who's a grade A human being, world-class guy.
Amazing. So as you embarked into your journey, as you mentioned, just NASCAR, you started in that world on the communication side, then eventually went to the NFL and then the Big Ten on the communications, marketing, PR side. What was your start into just even the communications world, let alone, you know, being able to work at essentially leagues and conferences most of your career?
Well, I started out as an intern with two NHL teams, the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Washington Capitals. And I fell in love with working. I fell in love with working in sports, and I fell in love with working in sports PR. But the problem was I was still a student, and I was kind of tired of being a student. I wanted to jump in the workforce. And there was a job that opened up at an expansion American Hockey League team in Baltimore, Maryland. And they were looking for a PR director. And I said, I made it my mission to get that job. I did everything. I faxed, I called, I sent FedEx packages with my resume. I did everything you could. This was like almost before email, right? I did everything I could to get their attention. Finally, I reached the owner of the team, and he said, look, if I give you this job, will you leave me alone? And I said, yes, of course. It paid $15,000 a year, and I took the job. And to do that, I had to drop out of school. So I am a college dropout of the University of Maryland. Now, I want to point out that I did finish up my degree while I was working slowly, but that's how I broke into the industry.
Incredible. You don't hear that story very often. And as you look back, and as someone who also teaches, you know, at NYU and works with other students, I can't imagine you're giving them the advice of dropping out. But as you think about, you know, what you've learned along the way of going from one place to another, like, what's the biggest lesson you've learned about how the communication world is shifting, and even just your own brand as you've gone from place to place?
Well, obviously, I do think it's shifting every day, and a lot of it is relying on the emergence of new stakeholders every day, the emergence of new technologies every day, and the impact of things like AI, for example, and really sort of the maturation of media and the maturation of the expectations that our clients have, and certainly some of the major professional sports leagues have with respect to the kind of campaigns that are resonating the most in the marketplace. So I think it's really as public relations and strategic integrated marketing communications practitioners, it's our job to stay on top of those trends and give the best advice we can. Some leaders in sports will take the advice, some won't, but ultimately it's our job to make sure that we're presenting all the facts and we're doing the best we can to help look around the corners.
What's one thing that you constantly preach to your students about their personal brand or professional brand as they're entering the industry? One that maybe you didn't necessarily have to worry about at the time when you were cracking in, but had to along the way, as you've taken executive roles. What's something that you're kind of constantly trying to embed in their minds as they think about their brand going forward?
Yes, for one thing, I'll give you three that I share with my students. First is one, everything is important. You never know if you're being tasked or tested. So treat every opportunity you have to shine with careful consideration and give, you have to give effort every day around every task. Everything communicates. So the way you look, the way you show up, the way you speak, the way you write, the your physical appearance, your time, whether you're on time, all of those things communicate. And so when you're making those decisions and when you're preparing to interact with people, just keep that in mind, especially for those young people who are going on job interviews or they're going to present at their first meeting. And the last thing is, everything is connected. In sports, it's such a small industry. It really is. And so everybody has someone that helped them along the way, either break into the industry or advance in the industry. And if you look back through your career or my career, you're finding these little connection points that have helped me specifically along the way. And so take advantage of those connections. Just remember, the way you treat people is extremely important. So make sure you're maximizing those connections because you never know who you're going who you who whose path you're going to cross again.
Speaking of that, what's an interesting one is as you've taken roles at NASCAR, the NFL, the Big Ten, there's so many people that you're meeting on a day-to-day basis, right? And so many people you're working with on a year in, year out basis. How have you kept in touch with people throughout your career? Is there something specific that you do that you're like, yeah, I think I do this well, or this has helped me along the way, or here's my philosophy on how to keep in touch with people that maybe aren't as close, but you need to at least just kind of make sure you're still building that relationship over time.
I wish I had a tried and true recommendation to share with you. Because I've been around so long, a lot of times it's me reading about people I've worked with or reading about people who I've come into contact with throughout my career and me reaching out to congratulate them or to comment on something that they've done. But it's multiple methods, texting and emailing, calling. We all have sort of an inner circle of people, sort of like our cabinet, if you will, that I stay in touch with more regularly. But I like to think that I do a fairly decent job at staying in touch with most people. And a lot of the things that I do, I'm leaning in pretty heavily on LinkedIn. I think that's a really important channel. And so I'll ping people every once in a while, or I'll just comment on somebody's post. I think, that's another way to just say hi. And make sure that people understand, like, yeah, I see you, and it's great stuff. And so, but there's no like one method that I'm leaning on.
As you think about your cabinet per se, right, and how you keep in touch with those people along the way as well, what's been one thing that's worked really well for you, just as it relates to building those relationships over time? And is it 10 people in your cabinet? Do you have a 20-person cabinet? What does that look like?
No, it's not 10 people, it's not 20 people. It's somewhere in between. I like to have other heads on problems as I move through this thing called life. And it's lots of different kinds of people who I can lean on, people who I trust, who I admire, and who I respect. So as your listeners and others are building their own sort of personal cabinets, I think one thing to keep in mind is how that there are people who are energy givers and there are people who are energy takers. So fill your cabinet with those energy givers and people who care about you deeply and personally, but also have a level of expertise and experience that can really help you along the way. And they have tools that you don't. Things that you are where you're weak, that lean on those people who are have strengths in those areas. So as you're building it, just start to think about what kind of people do you want around you? What kind of voices do you want in your ear?
Love it. As we mentioned earlier, we're going to get into kind of an analysis you did around NFL stadium entitlement, sponsors, and it that one's certainly an interesting world as you think about, all the different big brands that are associated and really pillars of communities, in 30 different markets, right? And so, as you think about what you've done and what you've found, enlighten us, and I should say 32, but there, all the different sports, they mesh together, right? What's the biggest thing you found across this analysis that you've done on the stadium entitlement side, and why the project?
Yeah, so first, we've got an amazing data and analytics practice here at ProSec Partners, led by Jeffrey Sidari, who's a fantastic partner and was one on this project. We wanted to take a look at the impact of traditional earned media on stadium entitlement partnerships and the lift. Whether it provided or a lift or not to the respective brand sitting atop that stadium. And we wanted to do it around the NFL draft, which is like April, May. This is the key planning period for sponsors that are activating in the NFL. And so we looked at stadium entitlement partnerships because that's sort of like you're driving through the city, you see the name atop a stadium. It's, you go to a game, you're immersed in that brand experience. So we took a look at that in the impact, and we found we had a couple interesting findings. First, stadium entitlement sponsorships are still very effective in driving brand affinity. The key for brands though is to activate those sponsorships aggressively and consistency. So what we found is nearly half of the 29 NFL stadiums, because we know that they're LA and New York have two teams. Nearly half of those stadiums with entitlement partnerships provided a net positive sentiment lift to their respective sponsors' brand in traditional online news coverage. So the top five, I'll share here for the first time, a State Farm Stadium,
Right in my
Allegiant,
backyard.
State Farm Stadium, Allegiant Stadium, Lumen Field, US Bank Stadium, and NRG Stadium. We also looked at the top performing the so we one of the other insights that we found was that hometown brands are among the top performing stadium sponsors. So the top five stadiums that have the highest net positive sentiment feature brands that are based in the same cities as the stadiums they sponsor. So GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium is number one. NRG shows up at number two. Raymond James Stadium at number three. Lucas Oil Stadium at number four. And AT&T Stadium at number five. So those are just a couple of key nuggets from the analysis. And one of the things that we'll be releasing is a little bit of sort of some tips on best practices on activating around stadium sponsorships. We'll be putting out a little piece on online, and fans and brands and teams and sponsors can go check it out.
As you looked into this and you were mentioning kind of top fives in certain areas, is there a correlation to performance on the field as it relates to whether, the team is being talked about more, right? Because they're doing well.
Yes, that's a great question. So, we found that traditional earned media sentiment towards a stadium entitlement sponsor has very little to do with that respective NFL team's on-field performance. So only two of the NFL teams that play in stadiums that provided the highest net sentiment lift, they finished the season in the 2023 season in the top 10 in the final standings. Only two. Those were the Ravens and the Lions.
And as you think about what that means going forward, right, for any team that's got a new entitlement sponsor coming on board, you think about the recent examples with Allegiant or SoFi, obviously being new stadiums, but even as some stadiums transition, to your point about GEHA being also recent. Versus, did you see anything related to whether one's been newer in the last few years versus one like a Gillette that's been around forever?
We didn't take a look at the longevity of the longevity of the sponsorships. The trick here is that most of these deals are long-term deals. We're talking about 7, 10, 20-year deals. So there, I know that there are a few new partners out there, but we didn't take a look at longevity.
What would be a hypothesis around one that's newer, right? Making more of a splash versus one that's been around for a while. Do you think that there could be a trend of, hey, the longer you're around, like a State Farm, right? Or Gillette or some of these others, that there's more of a lift over time, or is there an impact more in the immediate term?
Well, I think with the new stadium entitlements, GEHA, for example, or Acrisure, for example, what we're seeing is that there is a huge spike around the initial announcement, right? And there's a lot of interest and intrigue around why brands are sponsoring these stadiums and when they're launching. What's the backstory of the reason why that they've put their mark on these big coliseums. And one of the recommendations that we have for those brands is to really make sure that you're leveraging earned media to tell your business story. Use strategic communications to drive storytelling and awareness about your brand and how it's investing in these stadium entitlement sponsorships. And showcase how is it driving commerce? How is it enhancing the fan experience? How is it leaving an impact on the community? And so brands need to just do more than just slap that logo on there. They need to, those new brands, the ones that are new to the entitlement sponsorships, need to work really hard in telling the story about why they've made this massive investment.
One thing I'm going to throw a curveball at you here is that obviously there's some trending in terms of college football and college basketball arena, and or stadium entitlements being done, right? Like it's at the very beginning stages, let's call it, right? But as someone who was just looking into this from an NFL perspective, how do you see this potentially impacting, the college athletic space? Knowing that, hey, these are going to be new brands coming in, but they might be legacy type schools that you're working with fan bases that are all across, the country.
Yeah, I think there are probably fewer stadium entitlement sponsorships in college sports. But I do think that that is an area that's ripe for commercialization, particularly for schools that are looking to drive revenue to improve their facilities and to improve their athletics programs. And so ultimately, I think some of those partnerships are really good for challenger brands that are looking to establish their brand in a particular marketplace, or make a connection with a particular fan base.
And is there, from a media perspective, a difference between the college athletic space versus the pro sports space, and kind of what's the biggest difference there?
I don't know that there's a huge difference. I think perhaps you can make the argument, well, you definitely can make the argument that, professional sports gets more coverage, particularly the NFL, than college sports. But there is such a fervor around and a fan allegiance to their respective college team that, the passion is still there for collegiate sports. So I do think, for challenger brands, for perhaps regional or local brands that are looking to really supercharge their marketing communications, some of these college stadiums are really good vehicles for you to communicate a call to action or to help build your brand and build brand affinity.
Super interesting. We'll definitely take a look at the further analysis, the study as a whole. We'll link it in the episode details. But all right, let's wrap up the episode with some rapid fire. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, favorite stadium arena that you've been to watch a sporting event?
That's a great question. I went to the old Montreal Forum years ago and watched the last the New York Rangers' last visit to the Forum, and it was just the environment was so electric and energetic, and I really enjoyed it, and it had so much history, and there was a legacy of greatness in that building, and it was incomparable to some of the other stadiums and arenas that I've been to.
Favorite mode of communication? Text, phone, email.
I like text.
No more fax.
What's that? No more.
No more fax.
No more fax. I have to explain to my students, some of my students, what a fax machine is. Yes, text, WhatsApp. I would say those are the two.
Do you have a preference of linear or streaming?
Ooh, great question. It's gonna make me sound old, but I do lean towards linear.
The channel flipping versus
Yeah.
actually having
I
to
still like
watch.
the right. I still like the surprise of flipping channels to see what's on. I like the excitement and the intrigue of finding something that I love.
Do you have a favorite social media outlet?
It's changed for me, but right now LinkedIn for me is number one.
All right, last one for you. If there is a sport you could have played pro in, what would it have been?
Well, I played club volleyball and club hockey at the University of Maryland. I'm gonna stick with hockey, but I would I wasn't even close to having the skill set to be come anywhere near becoming a professional, but I would say hockey.
Well, John, really appreciate all the insights, perspectives, sharing your journey along the way of how you got into the industry, but also how you've made a big impact in the industry along the way, as well as what's ahead. So appreciate it and welcome on anytime.
Jake, thanks for having me, and keep doing the great work you're doing on this podcast. I think a lot of people are really getting energized by your conversations with the amazing guests you've had. So good luck in the future, and thanks again for having me on.
Thanks for tuning into today's episode on the Life in the Front Office podcast presented by Suja Organic. Remember to leave a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, subscribe, and follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram at Life in the Front Office. And don't forget to get your 15% off Suja at sujaorganic.com with the code LIFO, LIFO. And stay tuned for next Monday's episode with a new guest and new content.